All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Love to hear your lovely voices. When you sing it, you know, in the chorus of it. Yes. And you are right, Pep is God. Sergeant Pep. But let me say this though as well. Manuel Pellegrini, what a fucking legend. Thank you for it.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Hope you guys are all right. Starting off the show there, we had Liam Gallagher over in Chile, where he was a couple of days ago. He's in Argentina as at time of recording this. And yeah, I hope anyone over in South America going to see him in these shows is loving it, because it's always exciting when Liam goes abroad. Today, we're doing a few different bits. I am catching up with our good friend Richard. We're talking about some of the latest Oasis type news, and also with John Bell. John is featured in the new Liam Gallagher Nebworth documentary. So that's very exciting to hear about John's story, about how he got involved in the film and getting to go to the premiere and all that sort of stuff. So it's a really interesting chat. I hope you enjoy it. And yeah, perfect way to whet your appetite for the film, which is out in about a week from when I'm recording this. So as I mentioned, me and Richard discussed the Oasis news. However, that was a few days ago now. So just to fill you in, Liam over in South America, he has been... Yeah, so we played Chile on November the 8th and Argentina on the 10th, and he's due to play at Kilkfest in Paraguay on the 12th, which is Saturday, I believe. Looking at the set list, it's not particularly different from what we've been seeing recently. Morning Glory, Rock and Roll Star, Wall of Glass, Everything's Electric, Stand By Me, Roll It Over, Slide Away, Soul Love, back in, More Power, Diamond in the Dark, The River Once, Supersonic, Cigarettes Now Cult, Wonderwall, Encore, Live Forever, and Champagne Supernova. So it's standard straightforward set from Liam, what we've been expecting. I'm sure those of you over there have absolutely loved it. And one other thing, really, I suppose, I talked to Richard about the Noel Gallagher new single. We cover that in the chat with Richard, so I won't really talk about it here. But the only thing to say is that in our discussion with Richard, we are questioning whether or not Noel is specifically aiming for a certain thing with the lyrics, where the fact that the video is all about kind of drag queens, and we're sort of saying, well, I wonder if that's what he means in the lyrics. And yeah, Noel was asked on this radio interview, or a TV interview, I think it was, for he was sort of phoned in, but there was a woman presenter sort of stood there doing it. Yeah, and she was asking, like, what's the meaning of the song? And he basically said, well, watch the video, and that gives you the meaning of the song. So that would make us think that, yeah, he does kind of... It was kind of about gender issues or trans issues or whatever. So that's quite interesting, I thought. Anyway, that's enough of my chat. So we're going to go on now to hear from Richard. And then after that, we'll be hearing from John Bell.
Good morning, Zoe Ball. This is Noel Gallagher. Good morning to all Zoe Ball listeners. This is the first play of my new single, Pretty Boy. Anywhere in the world, well, I say anywhere, I mean North Korea went a week early, but, you know, we've got to be careful with that mob. So they've been buzzing off it for a week. But you're going to hear it now on the Radio 2 Breakfast Show. It's called Pretty Boy. Obviously, it sounds amazing. And hope they'll come in and see you soon.
Beneath the starry sky of a distant moon, at the magic moment, it's gonna come too soon.
All right, welcome back to the Oasis podcast. Our good friend Richard, how you doing, mate?
I think I'm all right, JC. I'm all right, mate. Yeah, a little bit frazzled, and it was quite a big weekend. So still a little bit struggling for that because, you know, I'm middle aged now. But other than that, mustn't grumble.
Fair enough. And the big weekend was seeing Kasabian, right?
That's right. Yeah, saw Kasabian at Ali Pali on Saturday night, which was also obviously being the Saturday before Halloween. It was the biggest party night of the year, and there was just a general kind of vibe in London of hedonism, and who was I to say no to that?
Well, I'm sure you would have been right at the centre of it in your glad rags, driving the party along. We'll talk about maybe Kasabian and stuff a bit later, because we are, if you're listening to this on the Oasis podcast, what we're going to do is have a chat about the Oasis stuff, and then if you want to carry on hearing us ramble on, then you can flip over to the Oasis Podcast B-Sides channel, which is the Rain podcast. And so we'll go and have a listen to that. But yeah, I suppose the big news in the world of Oasis is that Noel Gallagher has just released a new song. Yesterday at 8 o'clock in the morning? Pretty Boy. What do you think of it?
I like it. I really like it. It was not what I was expecting, though. I was expecting to come back with as he always does, I was expecting quite a big, brash, kind of obvious single, but this isn't. Mm. It's very, very subtle. I was thinking about this, like, the first time I listened to it, it's like, okay, yeah, okay, well, you know, always takes the first time to listen to fully understand it. And a few more listens, it's like, okay, there's not really choruses per se. You've got that, you know, she looked a lot like me, looked a lot like you bit. That's kind of like the first chorus, and then you've got another bit later on. And it's very, yeah, it's kind of quite circular in its own way. And I like the fact, kind of adding on to something you said on your countdown the other day, like with Rocking Chair, I like the fact it kind of fades in, you kind of like get entered into its world, but also the fact that it's probably going on somewhere without you. Mm-hmm. And that makes me think about how the kind of the atmospherics of the album are going to go. And I'm kind of intrigued by that. But yeah, it's different enough. It's not going to help the division in the fan base, I don't think.
No.
But hey ho, I think that's probably ingrained in law now. What do you think?
Yeah, I was so first listen, I was a bit nonplussed, to be honest, because I'm always listening for like, okay, where's the verse going? Where's the melody going? And I was like, okay, I've that sort of sounds a bit like he's used before. That sounds a bit like he used before. So the melody was sort of very. It wasn't like it's hard to write a new melody when you've been writing, you know, songs for 30 plus years or whatever. But, you know, but I sort of was like, okay, all right, fine. It's similar vibe to the sort of This Is the Place and Black Star Dancing. So that was the closest thing I'd kind of compare it to. But actually, to be fair, having, you know, just immersed myself in a lot of the solo stuff over the last few weeks doing the ranking, to be fair, people talk about sort of Chasing Yesterday and the first album like as if they're so different to what he's done on the recent EPs. They're not. There's a lot of the tracks on there that are sort of very similar. I've got that kind of poppy vibe. I mean, I suppose there's things like I know someone on, I think it was on Patreon,
picked out that the like not using proper drums, having that sort of Casio sort of drum sound and stuff and things like that that you probably wouldn't have done before. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the structure and things is sort of similar to how he's what he's done before. But yeah, I so the first listen, I thought, okay, it's good. It's just another kind of mid-paced Noel song. There's a bit where the guitar comes in, and obviously we found out it was Johnny Marr, and that you sort of go, oh, okay, that's interesting. That's sort of taking it up a notch. Yeah, so I really like that, you know, when that guitar kicks in and there's sort of a moodiness to the production that I think is cool. But for me, it was then watching it with the lyric video, because I'd sort of just, as I was listening to it, I just thought, as typical Noel lyrics, you know, and I hate weather metaphors, you know, and he uses weather metaphors too much. And that first line, beneath the starry sky of a distant moon and the magic moment that's going to come too soon. You know, that's just sort of by numbers. But then actually watching it with the lyric video, and you've got these drag acts sort of getting ready, and then you think, well, hold on a minute, is this, there's certain lines in there then that maybe it is kind of about sort of gender issues and things, and I want to change my star sign. Is that something about, you know, changing genders? And I don't know, she was a lot like me. She is, there's sort of blur, girls and boys, you know, what was it? She was a girl like me. She was a boy like you. And you think, okay, that's sort of interesting there. So, but I don't know whether that's kind of Noel's done that deliberately, or maybe like when he's handed it over to the video director, they've sort of read into it that, and then Noel's kind of gone with it. So I don't know, but I, what do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, you can, yeah, the androgyny kind of, lyrical androgyny, if you can call it that, was intrigued me at first. What's the line? She makes him sing like Elvis.
Yeah.
She makes, when she's feeling blue. So, I mean, that's not relevant to the androgyny, but it's quite interesting. But yeah, the video, it's, I mean, it kind of, for me, it brought to mind those old images of, you know, when Bowie's getting ready, when he was in the kind of, when he was in Ziggy, Aladdin Sane years, when he was, you know, applying his makeup. It kind of recalled that, those kind of old images, like that were on the, yeah, the one that I think it was on the Alan Yentov documentaries and things like that, kind of recalled that and kind of ties in, yeah, similar with the kind of the lyrical content itself. We know, you know, Bowie's a huge influence on Noel more and more as time goes on. Maybe he's trying to tap into that. I think it's quite brave if he is, because Noel is, you know, yeah, gender issues is not something you would imagine he would tackle, and indeed a kind of space in which he's leaving himself wide open to flack, basically. But yeah, but it does have that, does definitely have that kind of, that vibe of it, that kind of, yeah, that kind of overall feel. And like you say, the messaging in tandem with the, and it's a lyric video, it's not an official video, which I think we should also bear in mind, even though it's far more detailed than any lyric video I've ever seen. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it definitely lends itself to that. There's definitely kind of food for thought within that. I'd be intrigued to hear more, because normally he releases those little vignettes, doesn't he, on the mailing list of, it sounds like this or it sounds like, yeah, that. I mean, he very rarely goes into detail with the lyrics, but there's always a little bit more information he provides, you know, Black Star Dancing, he got the nod from Nile Rodgers, that type of thing. Or it sounds a little bit like ZZ Top, whatever. And there's very little of that. It's like, it's the first thing I wrote, first thing I recorded, so it seems appropriate to see if appropriate it's the first thing that's released. Noel's very ambiguous anyway. I think, yeah, I think that one will, has a lot more questions with it. It could just be nothing. It could just be, you know, and Noel will probably end up saying, oh, you know, it's just words, you know, lyrics mean nothing, his usual stuff. But I'd be very intrigued to see, yeah, the any kind of making of documentary or making of YouTube things that release, to see where he goes with that, or sorry, what it's actually about. But yeah, as you say, very much, I mean, it's not joining the dots too much to assume it is that when you, yeah, when you line the video with the lyric video with the lyrics.
And I don't know the song. He said the one only other thing I think he said about it, like years ago when he talked about a song called Pretty Boy coming out, was that it sounded like The Cure. And I'm not a huge Cure fan, but I think Andy Middleton said it sounds like A Forest or something. I don't know if you know that tune.
I do know that one. Yeah, yeah. And I was kind of myself, but I'm like you said, I'm not a huge, huge Cure buff. I know a reasonable amount about them. I know quite a few of the albums and the best of and stuff, but I'm not a huge Afshendo. But yeah, I do kind of get that vibe. It's kind of the little kind of, I don't want to do it, but the kind of motif that goes over and over, like the ding, 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 ding. That's quite curious. It's kind of a very subtle kind of motif that runs throughout the song. That is quite like The Cure. And you know, Noel said he wrote it on the bass, didn't he? Remember, he said he wrote the Pretty Boy originally on the bass, which I don't hear, but yeah, I certainly hear The Cure comparisons, absolutely. And it's got it's very atmospheric. It kind of it's almost anxious in the kind of the mood it creates, and not a kind of celebratory or you know, big arms in the air kind of joyous song that you should do. There's a lot more kind of tension to it. It makes me think, It's intriguing, I think, that the kind of atmospherics for like the interludes on Who Built the Moon, for example, might be something he's continuing with rather than, you know, as I say, I thought he'd come back with a relatively straightforward album, but it's certainly up to my intrigue, definitely. And, like I say, it can be interesting to see, you know, because he said there's orchestras on the album, there's going to be a bit more guitar, and you know, obviously there's a bit of guitar on Pretty Boy, but this doesn't kind of fit with what we know, really.
Intriguing, yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how it fits with the album. I mean, well, unless I've missed it. I mean, when we were messaging about it, I know you sort of thought, "Oh, well, hopefully we'll get an album announcement and a tour." And there's been nothing, is it? It's just literally the track.
Yeah, no. It shows what I know. I was convinced that we were like, right, we get full whammy. We're going to get an album announcement. We're going to get the maybe tour dates. We're going to get release date, pre-orders. I thought we'd get the whole shebang. We just got the song and that was it. I think Zoe Ball said that the album's not due until next year. He has said previously, I'm sure he said on Matt Morgan, that it was going to be March, which would kind of tally kind of similar to like Chasing Yesterday schedule, like one single now, another one the other, like just after Christmas, and then the album in March. Maybe that's what he's doing. But then for Chasing Yesterday, he already announced the album. He did what I expected. He announced the album and single that all came out at the same time. Sure. Quite muted, which was, like I say, just shows what I know. A bit. Once again, though, it's interesting that his strategies are varying because, you know, previously, Holy Mountain, Who Built the Moon, was all about the same package. Like I say, Chasing Yesterday. Now he's maybe playing a bit more careful. Who knows?
I mean, I say the last couple of years, it has been just the odd track here and there. We had those two, like, New Year's Day tracks, didn't we? And then we had the EP tracks were kind of issued over a period, and I suppose you just get that, you get the big release and the rather than just everything hitting on one day, so it's more of the it's less the Netflix model and more like the over a course of time, and it feels like another one of that, so it feels more of a continuation. But I say hopefully this is then, you know, they will sort of do an album now, please, Noel. Enough sort of messing around, please.
Well, we know it's done, don't we? We know it's pretty much in the bag. Like he's doing the strings at Abbey Road in the spring, so we know it's good to go. But that's an interesting point, actually. Maybe kind of learned that he actually got a bit more longevity in, you know, releasing the the first EP, Black Star Dancing, that'll got the attention. Then a few months later, This Is The Place, you know, it's a big thing. Yeah, maybe it's that. You're right. Maybe it's like, do this single now and then do the announcement for the second single. Stretch out a little bit.
So you remain in the news cycle, yeah. Yeah, interesting. There's nothing really Liam-wise, although I've heard he's ill, apparently. Like, I think we've heard that because he was supposed to be doing some recording and stuff, wasn't he? And I think we'd heard rumours that he wasn't feeling very well. Don't know if the latest.
I saw that as well. He was doing something for BBC Radio 2, which was
it's cancelled. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was due to be on next week, but I think it was recorded last. He's been on Twitter this morning.
Was he?
He's been chatting this morning rasters, whatever it was he said, and I think he's been. I've kind of half seen half an eye back and forth with Bonehead, so he's active again. But yeah, I mean, he's due in South America quite soon, isn't he, as well? So I guess you know what he's like with his voice as well. So he does get quite a lot of problems with it. So I guess it's maybe a safety first measure, but you know, who are we to speculate as the well being of it? But with his tour of South America coming up quite soon, I believe. Maybe it's just a precaution. I don't know what the Radio 2 thing was for anyway, to be honest.
No. Interesting. All right, what else is going on in the Oasis world? I've just been notified that, I don't think we'll say who it is, I don't know if they've publicly said it's them. But yeah, a former guest of the Oasis podcast has put up a demo tape up for auction. I'll put a link to the description here, but I've heard bits of it, and basically this is the sound check sound desk recording from when Noel was sound checking I think the G-Mex in 97, and it's fascinating. It's just Noel sat there playing for a couple of hours, just fiddling around basically during sound check, but in that he plays a couple of songs that have never been heard elsewhere, not seen the light of day. And then also he does sort of a version of Full On. So it's interesting then we're doing our Oasis timelines. Okay, so we had Full On in the Be Here Now era, you know, so that's interesting. It probably could have been an All Around the World B-side, actually, not held back to the later album B-side. But and it's up for sale. And I kind of, I'm thinking, the guide price given is £500 to £1,000, but it just breaks my heart that like someone like Brian Garcia might get it, because although I love Brian, he doesn't release stuff. If he's got it, he puts it in the vault, and you know, and you can come and see it if you ever pop around to Texas, but you're not going to listen to it. Whereas then, you know, a bunch of people on the Live Forever forum a few years ago found that Gems demos went up for sale. And then they released it. They just put it up for, you know, for people to listen to. And obviously, so then as soon as, you know, it's everywhere, it's on YouTube, it's wherever now. And so I kind of, I don't know, it's tempting to me to say, right, why don't a bunch of us put some money in and just buy it and then just release it? Although I think you may then get sued.
Yeah, it's a rights thing, isn't it? I think it's a rights over the source, for example. I think, the source of where it came from. And also, as you say, probably would get sued by Ignition. I don't know the legalities of it, but I imagine there's probably quite a lot of litigation that would be involved. But you're right, it's a shame that it's a treasure trove for fans, and I've heard, like you, I've heard bits of it too. And I'd love to hear more. But as we know, I'll just say this, as we know, certain people within the Oasis bubble are quite protective of certain things. So I think it's a legal minefield. You know, as you say, we know that Brian's got, what was it we know he's got? Is it the Liam Sung sad song, or is it Walrus?
Studio Walrus, I think, is the best. I think he has got Liam Sung sad song.
Okay. But, it would be very nice to see, very nice to hear, sorry. But probably not worth the trouble that various people would get in, to be honest. It's a shame. I'm sure we'll hear it all one day, you know. I mean, we might be long in the ground, but I'm sure these things, like, you know, the recent issue of Revolver by the Beatles, you know, the demo version of Yellow Submarine. Yeah. You know, I imagine, as I've said before, you know, these things will come out at certain points, but maybe not in our lifetime, sadly.
Yeah, but no, as I said, it would be great. It's just, for me, it's just like, I just want the songs to be released. I'll pay for, you know, I'll happily pay, you know, make it a free download or whatever, you know, I pay to hear it. But as I said, it's just a shame that they don't, you know, I think Noel's sort of just not that bothered about going through this stuff. But we know there's other stuff, you know, we know there's plenty of other tapes kicking around with various things on them that could have been released. And you would have thought now, 25 years of being now, that could have been a good option, but no.
It'd be interesting to see what he does, though, because he says that he doesn't see himself touring beyond 60, and that's, what, 5 years away now?
Yeah.
So he might, and this is, again, pure speculation, he might either just become a recording artist, Brian Wilson style, or with a lot more time on his hands, he might be like, well, actually, let's start plundering the archives. You know, do a Robert Plant, you know, go back and, I mean, I can't say this with Noel because he hasn't got the patience, but, you know, go back and just really kind of go through things with a fine tooth comb that will be of interest to fans like us. You know, I mean, he'd need a lot of corralling to do it, but I could see him maybe doing that or hope he might do that, because I don't know what he would do without, I mean, I know he takes forever to record music, but I don't know, without touring, I don't know, you know, that's a huge gap to fill for him, because, you know, his thing, he preaches that, well, sorry, his principle is that a year to record and then 2 years to tour, or a year to demo, a year to record, 2 years to tour. He always says 2 years to tour, that's his thing, which never seems to be, but that's what it is in his head. Yeah, so if you lock that in half, you've actually got a lot more time, so maybe.
I mean, he did say, so I'm just looking here, when they released Magic Secrets number one, Magic Secrets number one is the first in which I hope will be an ongoing annual release of NGHFB / Oasis demos / outtakes and rarities. This first release contains two demos circa 2020-2021. Those of you who are interested will have heard them already, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, hopefully, maybe if that, it'll just do that. But you know, one or two a year every record store day would be a bit annoying. But yeah, as I said, if you know, if they're aware... We know there's stuff out there. It's just a case of, you know, as we've said, let me or you in there in the archives and just go through and say, guys, look, here we go. I've gone through this sound check. I've gone through this, you know, the cassette tape. I've gone through this mini disc, and here's all the stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think it's also the quality control issue as well. Like Noel's, he has quite, I mean, it's, for example, there's a reason for Millions and Millions. You know, it's the holy grail for vinyl collectors to be reissued. Well, but it goes for upwards of £400-£500 now, the original version of Millions and Millions from 2000. Someone like me who can't afford to pay like that would really want to reissue, but Noel's kind of adamant that he doesn't like the sound of it. He doesn't like the recording. He doesn't like the production. And therefore, he doesn't really want anything to do with it. He disowns it. And I think it's kind of similar to that. And similar to like the Amorphous and Georgianus thing as well. Remember him saying, well, it's under my name. If I'm not happy with it, then I don't want it going out. And it's probably a similar thing. Like he would regard things like this as just, you know, not worthwhile, maybe.
Yeah, it's a shame though, isn't it? We want it. We want all of it. Mm-hmm. Oh dear. Yeah. Well, anyway, so I think there's nothing else interesting in the Oasis world. I suppose the only thing I've spent the last sort of the last few months just devouring and shifting things in my ranking for the Great Ranking. Did you have a chance to have a listen to that? And any thoughts on my definitive ranking?
I did very much. I did listen to all the episodes. I mean, God bless you, man. I mean, I was exhausted just listening to it. I don't know how you felt actually going through it and doing it and recording it. I have a few grumbles with it, or a few differences of opinion, shall I say. I mean, I, for example, Can You See It Now? I Can See It Now. I actually really like...
Whereas I had it last.
Yeah, exactly. I like its kind of motoric, kind of noy, craftwork, well, yeah, krautrock kind of driving beat, drive to it. I've always been a big fan of Mucky Fingers. I know you're not. I can't really argue objectively with the top 10. I mean, you know, you could have thought of something else as number one, but then by the same token, you know, it's so obvious. It's obvious for a reason. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's a national anthem, for God's sake. Yeah. You know, no spoilers for those who haven't listened to it. You can probably, you know, take a guess from what we're saying. Yeah. But yeah, objectively, I couldn't really argue the top 10. I mean, I know you've obviously got a massive soft spot for Stay Young for very obvious reasons. It wouldn't be in my top 10. Likewise, Round Our Way, you wouldn't. I would have had, you know, other, I can't think of any more off the top of my head, but, you know, I think Dead in the Water, perhaps for me, maybe they contended for top 10. I know that's kind of a bit lower down for you, but it's all subjective, you know, it's all subjective, isn't it? And I think broadly speaking, you know, you were pretty much bang on in terms of like your key touchstones is the kind of the mid-range stuff, the lower range stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I must admit, my heart did break when you were going on about If I Had a Gun, and then you're like, and next up is Bonus Bank Holiday. I was like, oh my God, like, what? One of those, like, one of Noel's most heartfelt romantic songs. And then above it, Bonus Bank Holiday. It's like, what, man? But, you know.
I know.
Had your reasons.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference is, I think about this stuff a lot. And, you know, a lot of people just go, it's great or it's shit. You know what I mean? And that's it. Like, there's been quite a bit of discourse about my placement of, Mucky Fingers and Little James. If, for instance, I've got Little James, I think, in the 250s or something like that. And obviously it goes to, like, 288. So, you know, whereas somebody just go, oh, that's shit. But it's like, well, show your workings. You know what I mean? That's what I said to a few people. You can say whatever you want. But if you want to be treated seriously, any of this stuff, it's like, right, well, I can tell you for every single song what I think of the production, lyrics, emotional resonance, cultural significance, structure, chords. You know what I mean? I haven't done, you know, out of 10 for each of those things, but I listen to enough music, and I've, especially this stuff, where I can go, okay, I can hear that song. So for instance, the new Noel song, I've basically placed it in. I haven't decided fully yet because I'm going to let it sit with me for a while. But at the moment, for me, it's basically on a par with This Is The Place, Black Star Dancing and Blue Moon Rising. That I don't think it's significantly better or worse than those. And so I kind of slot it in with there. And I think that's like 211 or something. I think they're around there. So you sort of go, okay, well, that's where they should fit. But then actually, if I then look about 30 places above it, there's some songs 30 places above it, I think, wait, so it's better than that. You know what I mean? Because there's some songs, like when I placed in the one I forgot, and you're like, and I sort of thought, well, I'll put it in there. And it's like, it's better than that, it's better than that, it's better than that. But then actually you go, it's funny that some songs feel better than the ones around them, but then you can go 30, 40 places below, and actually you say, oh no, well, those are better. But you know, as I said, it's so hard when these things are, you know, are so close. As I've said loads of times on it, so many of them, you know, they're just, yeah, I really like them, but it's a little bit the lyrics let it down, or I really like it, but, and it's just really all of those different factors that I talk about, how important are each of those things for you? So, you know, so for instance, I'm not, hence Columbia and Mucky Fingers and Can You See It Now, are vibe driven songs is how I think. They're cool, they've got a groove driven songs, I suppose. Not interested in groove driven songs at all. They to me, I would much rather, like you said, Bonus Bank Holiday, Diggsy's Dinner, humor in lyrics, you know, I love Divine Comedy, for instance, and so stuff like that for me would always be higher than a song that's got a cool groove to it. But over and above that, you know, what else is really, is there anything else to recommend it? But if you don't care about that because you just love the groove and you love to put it on when you're having a smoke or in a dance or driving or whatever, then none of that other stuff matters. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And it's kind of a, I mean, it's obviously, I imagine you would do it differently now, because right? It's so much affected by time. Like, for example, I when I first heard Diamond in the Dark, I was like, really? And I was like, really? I mean, there is some proper kind of clangers with that one. And then a lyrical clanger, sorry, you know, shining like a diamond in the dark, floating, you know, lying in the pot, all that kind of stuff as well. But that was the first thing I heard. And after a while, it's like a few more, and now I love it. So, I mean, now it's probably maybe my favorite Liam solo tune, maybe, oh, wow, today. But then, you know, look, Liam's, I was thinking about this when I saw him in Cardiff. Everything's Electric dropped from the set. Shockwave dropped from the set. Both of the kind of comeback singles. Wall of Glass has stuck it out. Do you know what I mean? And has outlasted all of them, because that's probably, that's clearly a favourite for Liam that has a bit more kind of resonance. These things are kind of so interchangeable with time. You know, Stand By Me, perfect example. It's, you know, it was a, for Oasis fans, it was a good single, and all right, it was a number two single. So it was pretty well known. But yeah, then it kind of went under the radar. Now, by the Halifax advert, obviously, it's become, you know, a big moment. I think you said it in your review, yeah, a big moment in Liam's shows. Yeah, these things are kind of, yeah, so interchangeable. There's just, there's a certain few newer ones that will always be at the top. But I think the rest, once you kind of go beyond the top 20, a lot is interchangeable, really. I spent the night awake, had all that I could take. I might not see those baby blue eyes anymore. It takes two, and I really don't know why to shake these memories.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the same with, you know, like anything, like if you're trying to rank kind of your favorite chocolate bars, you know what I mean? Or James Bond films or Marvel films or whatever, you're always like, well, I don't know, you know, it's, you have to sort of think about those different elements, and it's how those things hit you. But anyway, it's good fun. I did, it was a slog, but I did enjoy doing it, and now it's done. I can now go, okay, well, where I'm going to put that one and that one. So it's nice to have that as a record anyway.
Just to add to that, and I'm bring on the haters, Moonraker will always be the worst James Bond film. Fact. 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 James Bond in space, Jaws getting married off. No, thank you.
Fair enough. I haven't seen Moonraker recently enough to tell you, actually, but yeah.
It's shit. Don't bother.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I think that's everything in the Oasis world, I believe. So, yeah. So in the Oasis podcast, it's going to go back to me. Or if you want to carry on hearing me and Richard, then shift over to the Oasis podcast B-sides.
Packed. Ready. Cars full.
I'm looking forward to the greatest day of my life.
All the essentials.
I'm too wired to stay because I'm on the way to Nepal.
Come on, you know.
Come on, you know.
Come on, you know.
Bando.
After the pandemic, you know, the bills are fucking too high, and there's all of this shit, there's all of that shit. The government's not fucking listening. Just to get us all in that field and have that special time again. It's fucking amazing.
To go toe-to-toe with his former band. It seemed ridiculous at the time. It's a big deal playing that gig.
I didn't think that we'd ever get back to do Nebworth.
His voice! It ain't gonna carry a Nebworth.
I think he was nervous. He's excited. He doesn't know how it's gonna go.
I just want to get on that fucking stage like a caged animal.
Fucking let him have it, man.
Today's gonna be the better day of our life.
Come on!
It's a magical position to be around music.
The joy that it brings and the tears and stuff like that.
I had no problem going back there. The people wanted it. I'll be there, man.
So, yeah, it's been a mad couple of days. couple of weeks for you, I suppose.
Oh, mate, it's been, surreal, really. It's, when it first all came about, I just thought it was going to be like maybe maybe an audio drop somewhere along the line, maybe a few pictures they want to see, maybe a few clippings from various bits. But yeah, just went way beyond that. Very early doors. It's just been a surreal and it's just sort of a once in a lifetime type experience, really, I suppose. Because, you know, to be in a documentary of any type, but to be one that sort of goes to the big screen and then, you know, we'll go out on DVD, etc. And
yeah,
just forever. Mad.
Yeah, you'll be that guy from that documentary forever now.
That's the one.
Well, let's take it back a step. So, when did you first sort of get into Oasis and stuff? You're probably a little bit younger than the original Oasis fans.
I'm 41.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So, early sort of 94, 95. So, I left school in sort of 96, I think. So, I sort of got to the sort of the tail end of sort of Definitely Maybe. And then What's the Story was obviously the big one for me, because we were in the last couple of years at school. And, it was during them points in the mid-90s where, you know, everything was a bit shit, really. And there's, you know, nobody really had a lot to hold on to and hang on to. But, you know, suddenly this, you know, this Manc band was like, and it changed, you know, everyone in, you know, of our generation. It's, you know, it's just a thing. If you're into your guitar music and you love that thing, it was just something that you were massively part of. Yeah. I got into it. I've got an older brother. I mean, this is all in the documentary. It's, you know, I tell my story of how it all comes about, pretty much. I came across, I lost my dad when I was like three. So my older brother was sort of like my father figure, really. And I came across this cassette in his car one day. And I was like, because he was into the Smiths and Sex Pistols and stuff. It was sort of like my brother's in his like mid-50s now. So he was sort of like the punk and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just came across this tape in his car, in this little red Ford Fiesta. I was like, fucking hell. You know, and at the time, it was the sort of the rave scene was sort of that mid-90s. So, like, you know, everyone at school was, like, yeah, listening to rave and all that sort of thing. So, you know, what's this? And he said, it's a new band from Manchester called Oasis. And I was like, wow. And it, from that moment on, it just, you know, it blew my mind. It absolutely blew my mind. And, you know, from then onwards, it was, you know, take a book with a picture of Liam to the hairdressers, get your hair cut like him, get, you know, your Adidas Sambas, your, you know, the original retro Oasis t-shirts, the black t-shirts with the Oasis emblem across the front.
Yeah.
You know, what's the story on repeat every day at lunchtime in the shitty mobile classrooms that we had, you know, there was the sixth form block as such. And yeah, just from that point onwards, it was, you know, there was never any going back. You know, I was quite unique in the fact that, you know, there was a group of us that were massively into it. But I got the haircut and stuff. And it's like, you know, nobody had a mod haircut then, that sort of thing. It was just, you know, everyone had an undercut and like curtains and that sort of thing. And, you know, I remember going down at lunchtime to get my haircut. I just dropped this book in. A hairdresser's called Sizzbiz. And just dropped that. I said, just cut my hair like that. And she's like, are you sure? And I was like, absolutely. I'm back at lunchtime looking like a fifth Beatle. It's like, yeah.
Well, I had exactly the same thing. I had a picture of Liam from my mate's sister's Sugar magazine. And it was, I think it's like the Wonderwall time. And I was like, yeah, that. And yeah, I had that. And it was literally like, you know, I had curtains and it was like, brush them forward, sorted. It's not that, wasn't that difficult, actually.
I look back at our leaving photos now, and you know, everyone's pretty much got the same haircut and everyone's wearing like Oakley sunglasses were quite fashionable back in sort of the mid-90s as well. So we've all got these wraparound Oakley sunglasses on with like dreamscape jackets and stuff, and there's me in a pair of like round red sunglasses. Yeah, with this Beatles haircut, but you know, it's good to be different.
Oh, that's quality. I probably told the story on here before, but me and my mate, who was also really into it, and we both had the haircuts and the glasses and the fashion and everything, and we went on holiday with my folks to Spain. It's when we were 16 and the summer of 96. And so, and just, we were like, okay, let's count the amount of times we get called Liam and Noel. And yeah, it was literally, we lost count on the first day because every, hey, like that, because two geezers walking around. And obviously we had the swagger and everything, but it's just not, you know.
Yeah, but it's like it now, even now you see someone with, like, you know, I live in Norfolk, so, you know, it's, you know, everyone sort of looks the same to a degree. But, you know, you see someone wandering around with, like, you know, mod haircut and stuff, and like, oh, yeah, thinks he's Liam Gallagher and all that. It's like, yeah, no fucking what.
You know what I get is my kids, if we're walking down the street, and if we walk past, like, someone with a mod haircut or Stone Island or, you know, just anyone looking laddish, but as we walk past, the kids will go, I bet they listen to your podcast, Dad. I'm like, cheers, guys. Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So how did you end up getting involved in this documentary?
So then, obviously, in 96, I went to the original Nebworth shows. Me and two of my schoolmates and my older brother, we managed to get tickets. I stole my mum's debit card and, like, paid for them over the phone. Like, she obviously phoned up back then. It wasn't like it is now. And we ended up going. So I was, you know, I was one of the original Nebworth lot. So it was, Liam dropped something on his Instagram, probably back in start of May, maybe the end of March.
Okay.
Just saying, people who were either going to the new shows this June or were original at the original shows, if you could do like a video outtake, send it into this link that came with on the Instagram. And I basically did that. I basically did a 10-minute ramble from talking about the original Nebworth, talking about what Liam, you know, meant to me personally, what I'd been through, how his music had helped me, how he'd helped me. And they took it up, and I got a phone call end of May, no, beginning, middle of May sort of time, from one of the directors. She just said, we loved your video that you sent in. Would you be interested in being in it? And I was like, I said to her, someone winding me up here. And she said, absolutely genuine. She said, I'll send you an email with some dates on, and let me know if you can make any of them. And I was going to wear my stag do. I got married in August, and I was going to wear my stag do to Portugal. And then the following week, I was going to Rome. My missus was going out to a conference in Rome. So I like, and they only had this, bear in mind, this is the middle of May, and obviously the Nebworth shows were like June
4th. Yeah.
So I literally had about a 3 or 4 day window where they could actually come down. And I also said to her, yeah, no worries. Would you want me to do like a telephone interview? Or she's like, no. Film. We're going to send a full film crew, sound crew, drone operator, directors, the whole works. And I'm like, well, you're going to send that lot down to Catfield in Norfolk? Like, absolutely. And just to paint a picture, as majority of people know, Norfolk's a very sleepy, you know, quiet place. Yeah. The road we live on, we're both in our early 40s, me and the wife, and we're the youngest in the street by, you know, a fair bit. And I was like, oh, this ain't going to end well. We live in that little sort of cul-de-sac type thing. And they turned up, and this guy turned up with a drone, and he's like flying it all over the houses and stuff. And our neighbours, we pretty much got scrapping with them because they were like, this is an invasion of our privacy. You can't do this. And this guy's like worked on movies and other documentaries and like had, you know, all the, and he's like, I've got licenses. The police have been informed what we're doing, so on. And they're like, you can't do this. I'm going to go to the parish council and all this. And it's like,
get off my land. Like, that's very Norfolk.
Yeah, I'll draw you with my tractor. But it's very much like a Liam scene for the mid 90s. It's like, I thought it was going to be like a full scale scrap. But the director turned up, and I sort of just said to him, I was like, mate, they're not happy. And he's like, that's all right, I'll just make sure that we include as much of their house on the footage as we possibly can.
Brilliant.
Which Love is genius. But, so yeah, that was how that all came about.
Fantastic. But and so we're like, having just, you know, because you do that thing, you sort of, oh, I'll record my thing or I'll do whatever. But then when they're actually like, oh, you're coming to my house, I'm going to be on this. Like, did you then have to sort of, I don't know if I'm, how I feel about that.
I quite like doing media stuff anyway. I was in local football for a long time, so I did quite a lot of local radio and stuff, and did like, I was a man. So I did some sort of, and I quite like the whole media side of things. And so I thought, you know what, it'll be a great experience. And if nothing more comes of it, just to, you know, have the sound crew down and being recorded, people in, I thought we'll go with that. And
if they didn't end up using your bit, then it was an experience.
Absolutely. I mean, I've since found out there's like over 60,000 that applied. Wow. Over 60,000 videos to go through. But yeah, so then they, you know, that was then how it all came about. It came down and did the filming. Incredible crew, the nicest people you could, you know, they were so polite and, you know, I don't know what I was expecting, but you know, you get a load of like, I don't know, film crew and stuff come down from London. You don't know what to expect, do you? You just don't know. But they were incredible, just the nicest people. And Toby, who's the main director, he actually came down. So he did all the interview and stuff, because they had sort of a few people that did the directing of it. So because they had a couple of people from different countries who were in the select few. But they picked six. There's six contributors to the film, six main contributors, picked from 60,000, I think. So
that's amazing, mate. And then so when do you then? So did you know that you were going to be in it before then the trailer appeared, and you're like, oh shit, there's me?
Well, I'd sort of had some back and forth emails with Katie, who's the deputy director. I sort of had little bits and pieces going backwards and forwards. And it was never sort of said whether we were going to be used or not. But yeah, and then obviously the trailer dropped. And this is, so I run a cleaning company. That's what I do for a living. I've got my own business, which is a cleaning company. And my mate texts me and he's like, mate, have you seen the fucking trailer? I'm like, what are you on about? This was 9 a.m. on the Monday or whatever it was. I was like, no, what trailer? He's like, for Nebworth. I was like, really? So he pings it over. I look at it and I'm like, fuck me. And the link he sent it over, it's like on Liam's Twitter. And I'm like, just a look. I was like, that's 3.6 million people that are now looking at that.
Yeah.
So just for a bit of clarity, at 9 a.m. I was being viewed by 3.6 million people. At 10 a.m. I was out cleaning gutters. So, you know, rock and roll, isn't it?
Yeah, you came down to earth a little bit there.
When it's my lads obviously in it as well, so the sort of the take on it is, I was 15 when I went to the original Nebworth, and when we took him in June he was 15, so it's obviously 25 years later. So it was a little bit of sort of how it worked was a bit mad, really.
Your lad, who's taller than you?
He is taller than me at 16. But it wouldn't take long because I'm 4 foot nothing, so you
know. All right, fair enough. And so talk me through so they filmed at your house. Did they then film you in the gig as well?
Yeah, so they came in, so they did all the film, and we basically did a full interview in my lounge, which is quite good because we're renovating our house, and like the lounge is pretty much the only bit that's done, so you know, that was quite good. But yeah, they filmed here, and then we did some bits in the garden, and they also did all the drone footage and stuff. And when you see the documentary, it's so beautifully filmed beyond how it is produced is incredible. But yeah, so they did all that filming. Now they're here for the full day. I mean, I talked for, you know, probably 2 or 3 hours about just random shit, really. And then I met up with Katie at Nebworth on the Saturday. And I did a 10-minute bit with her as well. But we had to film all the like going down and at the actual gig and who we were with and the overnight and the travel and so on and so forth. So it was like a full like fan diary.
Okay. But that was just you on a phone or something, was it?
Yeah, just on the GoPro. So
okay. Our GoPro. Okay.
Yeah. All the contributors had the same sort of remit, really. They had, you know, show us how you get there, how you got there. And, you know, there's a lad who came up from Scotland. There's a lass who came over from Belgium, one from Japan, China. So they picked quite a diverse. The six that are in it is very sort of a, you know, my take on it is that I think there's two of us. We were the original, went to the original Nebworth and then obviously went to the new one. My story is quite a, you know, like a pull on the heartstrings type thing because of what I went through to what when Liam came back in his debut album. It was like I'd lost my mum and my sister both within the space of like 9 months in that year that he came back. So it's like, and because he'd meant so much to me to have him, and that sounds cliche, but to have him back in my life doing what I loved for so long, it was sort of something to hold on to. See me, I live in wonder. I'm gonna meet you on the other side. Well, I'm gonna steal your thunder. You better run, you better hide. I see you, you think you're something. Well, you're nothing, you're a butterfly. You've no love, you've no reflection. You better run, you better hide. So and that was my take on it. Some of the other ones are quite different. Like the lad from a lad from Japan, China. He sort of is in like a Oasis tribute band and like flew over from, you know, and to be first at the gate. And as a young lass, 3-year-old, she suffered with cancer, so she's in remission and she's all good now. But she's in it and she's incredible. You've probably seen the clip.
Adrena, isn't it? Adrena. Yeah, her folks have got that Keep Adrena Dancing. She's met everyone. She's met all her heroes. What an amazing bloody run she's had. Yeah.
Lovely little girl. Yeah, real like, she'd light up a room. It's mad. Like,
fantastic.
Liam was loving it. You know, she is.
So is this then at the premiere then now? So you didn't see, you never got to meet Liam or anything like that?
No,
it was Nebworth itself. You were just at the gig.
No, it was always documented in the emails. This is not a chance to meet Liam.
Really?
Always documented. Yeah, so because you know, I'm guessing majority of people probably would have thought, oh, if we get involved in that, then you know, there's a chance to meet Liam and all that sort of, which is, you know, is always your dream. You know, it's always your dream, but. It was never mentioned, and obviously the Nebworth stuff. We didn't get paid for any of this. It was a fan thing, you know. It was a chance to be part of it, you know, part of history again. Mm. And you know, that's what everybody signed up for. And everyone who's in it, you know, you did it because for your love of Liam and his music, and you know, and that genre. And so yeah, there was never any point that it was ever going to happen, you know. And we didn't really know if there was going to be a premiere, you know, up until we only found out last Thursday, maybe Friday.
Okay.
That there was going to be a premiere. There was talk of it. I spoke to because I needed to like sort out work and stuff. And I thought as it gets closer to the release date, was there going to be one? Was there not? And, you know, I'd done a load of bits. So I'd done a bit for like BBC Breakfast Radio. Pretty Green had sent me a load of like free stuff and that. And it's just like, you just praying that there was going to be a premiere? Because I really want, more than anything, I just wanted to see how I'd sort of been portrayed, really.
Yeah, of course, before it then hits the main screen. Yeah.
Like, you know, if we'd done 2 hours worth of like talk and chat and that sort of thing, and you know, coming from Norfolk, I don't necessarily say I'm massively from Norfolk, but at the same point, you know, I didn't want them to, well, not that it would have been any choice of mine if I sounded like a carrot cruncher or not, but you know, Yeah,
they've got the Wurzels in the background every time you talk.
That's it.
That would have been brilliant.
It's just hoping that that it'd come across all right. But because I hate listening, but I listen back to like the radio stuff. I listen back, I think, fucking hell, you sound like a right knob.
No, you're not like too, you know, you're not like proper Norfolk.
No, I don't talk like that.
No, not quite. Yeah.
It's close, but. Because I ain't got a brand new combine harvester now. Come on now, let's get together in perfect harmony. I got 20. But yeah, so we never knew. And even up until the point of like going to Premier, I had no idea how much I was going to be in it, how period of time, whether I was just in the trailer or any of it. I spoke to Kate and she sort of said, we love what we've done with your bit. And I was like, well, that's nice, okay. But what is that bit? So yeah, had no idea about it. And then, like I say, got an email last Thursday saying the premiere was going to be in Shoreditch last night.
Fantastic. So talk to me about going along there and and that whole experience.
Shoreditch is a weird place, isn't it? I've never been before.
I haven't been for a few years, but it's pretty trendy. It was went from being pretty rough to pretty trendy.
Well, you say this, I'm not entirely sure that the part we were in was the trendy part.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's a little bit ropey around the edges, I must admit. But we rocked up.
So you went down in your tractor?
Went down in combine. Combine. Tractor's been used this time. Yeah, you have to use the combine because it's obviously been done with. So to leave all the other guys with the tractors. Went down and we stayed in a hotel in Shoreditch and the showing was, we had to be there for 5:30 for a 6 o'clock showing. And again, I Googled the cinema. So it's a private cinema now. So it's not any public access to it, but it's fucking cool. It's like a proper retro cinema, like with the arch ceilings, proper old school, like armchairs with a little table in between each seat with a little old school lamp on it.
Nice.
Just really, really cool. Rocked up, barrels full of beer and wine and stuff. So yeah, a few drinks and stuff and just a little sort of mingle. Because I hadn't met anyone else who had been in the documentary. I'd met Kate and Toby, who are the two of the directors, but I met all the other guys who have been in it. So it's nice to have a chat with them and what their expectations were of it and what their takes. And that, you know, everyone's in the same boat, you know, nobody knew anything of what they were going to be in it, how much they were going to be in it, how they'd been betrayed. It's nice. We had sort of half an hour chat to just mingle with people like that. A few photographers there taking pictures and bits and pieces. And at that point, I'd convinced myself all the way through that there was no way that Liam was going to be there, just so I wasn't disappointed if he didn't rock up. The young Scottish lad is in it. He did say to me, he's like, oh, I've been stalking Liam's Twitter. I looked through one of the replies and he said it was raining. He must be in London. He must be in London. I was like, mate, that's quite hardcore, that is. And obviously, I'd done a little bit of research. So I've seen that he's not in South America until next week. So I sort of guessing, and I think he's been poorly, hasn't he? He's had this this virus problem. So I thought, he's probably at home. So then there's a couple of photographers talking behind us, and they're talking to one of the management, one of the crew. And I just heard him say, what's the logistics behind it? How many people have you got coming? Can we get them in to do this, this, and this? And I was thinking, that sounds a little bit, you know, that something might be going. But then I spoke to the directors and stuff, and they were 100%. I didn't ask the question, but there was no ever mention of, oh, by the way, at the end. We went in, watched the documentary, which seems to be, in my mind, is quite far down the line of things now, because after everything that's happened, that's the bit that I've talked less about to everyone and my shows, socials and stuff. But it's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
I'd happily say, yeah, it's all right, or it's just another documentary, it's just another As You Were, or whatever, but it's not. It's so beautifully put together, and it mixes so many different emotions, and it captures the moment of, like, people... Because it's probably those sort of gigs were probably the real first big gigs after COVID, and, like, you know, and it captures different age groups, different genres, and just... you know, different walks of life of people, and the humour in it and the soul and the raw emotion, like Liam's humour in it is fucking bang on. It's all of it just fits. Like, so they dip in from Liam obviously being shown round, or Liam showing round the site before it goes before people arrive, and a few days before, and out and about with him, and then they dip to an interview and then dip back to him.
Fucking hell, it's big, Debs. Fucking trying to do with me. It's in the come on your know thing.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's fucking massive.
You were watching yourself, where would you watch in the field?
Oh, I'd be at the bar, me. They're getting fucking one kid just going, check him out there, and not.
I've heard people go, oh, you never go back to Nebworth. Once it's done, it's done. It's like, well, I do, you fucking shitbags.
There's a lovely bit with him and Peggy on the helicopter, and he's helping her hot off the helicopter and stuff like that. And he comes, and I never thought it would be any different, but he comes across incredibly well in it. And it's like, There's three C bombs, I think, in the first 2 minutes, which gives you the sort of the outtake on it. But watch the film all the way through, and then we had a nice little bit at the end of the film where they there was some couple of the songs from the gig which actually aren't in the film, but they played them from start to finish, which were
it sounds
banging. I mean, like the whole hype behind the whole There's No Oasis songs in it. Don't make shit to a difference to me, to be perfectly honest. You wouldn't, you just wouldn't, you know, it is what it is, isn't it? And I don't think it wouldn't have made it any better at all in my book.
Right.
Film all finishes, and they say, but before the film starts, John Kennedy did a little bit of an intro with one of the directors beforehand, just to sort of talk through it. And then they sort of said, at the end, can the six contributors all stay, and we'll get you a nice group picture in front of the screen with the, and I was like, yeah, cool. Film finishes. I'm like, gonna have to go for a wee. I've had four bottles of Peroni. I'm gonna have to go for a wee. I've been sat here for an hour and a half crossing my legs. So as I'm disappearing out of the door, Katie, the director, says to me, "You're not gonna be long, are you?" I was like, just going for a wee. I will. So I like come back in, and as I come back in, they're literally kicking everyone else out of the theatre apart from
the six, like,
the six and the and my missus and like the parents of the little girl and stuff. I'm like, what the fuck's going on here? And I literally stood at the wall, and the door opens. Liam just walks in, straight to me, shakes my hand. All right, I'm like. And I said to him, I literally looked at him and I went, "Are you fucking kidding me?" just like, so he then, and it's just, you know, it's just one of them like real surreal things. Like, it sounds really sad, but I've like dreamt for fucking years and years and years to me.
What would you say? What would I say in that moment?
Just to shake his hand, or just to like be in the same room, or you know, not the same room, been in the same room at gigs and stuff, but you know, just to be in the same room and sort. But yeah, then he goes off and does his thing with all the others, the two or three, they're sort of down the front, and Debbie comes and literally comes over to me. She's like, "John," I'm like, "Fuck me," she knows who I am. She knows, like, she fucking knows who I am, and she's like, "Your interview got me." She's like, "Proper got me." She's just like, I was in tears. She's like, "I've got so much admiration for what you've been through." And, you know, and I literally had probably a 15-minute conversation with her about life. And she's just the most incredible woman. She like had every single piece of time for you in the world. And like, I was blown away by her kindness, and just as a soul, it's just. And I sort of said to her, "I said, you, what you brought Liam back to be." She's like, "I didn't do it; he did it." And I was like, "But yeah, she was just incredible," and she just hugged me time and time again. And I'm just like, lovely, lovely lady. And Amy, one of Liam's backing singers, she was there as well. And again, incredible lady. She's like, she knew who I was, and Alf, my lad. And she's like shouting at Liam. She's like, "Liam, this is John, him and his son. They're in the documentary.
it's heartbreaking. They're the fucking stars of the show. And I'm like, oh my God, like Jesus. So then I sort of, I wander down the stairs and I'm just stood there, like I'm looking at you now, I just stood with my hands on my face and I'm thinking, and he's like 5 foot away. And I'm like, so he literally walks up to me, puts both his hands on my shoulders. He's like, where are you from, John? You smell incredible. And I'm like, fucking hell, Liam Gallagher's telling me that I smell incredible. He's after me. And you're like, well, you know, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on here? It's like, but yeah. And then I just had a 10-minute chat with him just about life.
Yeah.
Just about life, about his, you know, about his health and stuff, like with his hips and all that sort of stuff. We talked a bit about football. He's like really complimentary about my shoes. He's like, because I had like a pair of Investors on and he had a pair on as well. And he's like, oh, fucking hell, man, you got the same shoes on as me. Fucking cool. I'm like, fucking hell. And he asked me twice. He said to me, he spoke to me, he's like, where's your coat from? I said, like, it's a pretty green one. They sent it to me for nothing because I told him I was in your documentary. Did they? I was like, yeah. He's like, that's fucking cool. I like it. I was like, but yeah, just honestly, and you know, and it's like a really old, it's a phrase, you know, like people say never meet your heroes, don't they? Yeah. Because they'll always disappoint you. But fucking hell, just the most humble, genuine, nicest guy. He, like I said to him, yeah, I said, when Amy's showing him, she's like, yeah, John and his son Alf. And he's like, where's Alf? I was like, I said, he's playing football tonight because he plays for Norwich. And, said he couldn't come down. I was like, can you do him a video? He's like, yeah, no fucking problem. So it's like, give one of the photographers my phone and put it on video. And he's done like this really cool little video to Alf, like saying, you know, can't wait to see you in your blockbuster and we'll catch up for a selfie soon. And he takes two steps back and he looks at me and he's like, and your dad's fucking cool.
I'm no like, way.
So I get on the phone to Alf when I get home and I'm like, mate, if you ever tell your mates I'm not cool again, I'm going to get this clip out time and time again that Liam Gallagher says I'm cool. So that will forget. I'd die a happy man, man.
That is, isn't it? Yeah. That's peak. What do you do? You just have to, that's it. You just have to just disappear off and like never be seen again.
I'm done now. But yeah,
live on a rock somewhere.
Yeah, so then that all sort of petered out and stuff and sort of, I sort of said to him about, he hasn't seen the film. He hasn't seen it. I said to Debbie about it and she's like, fucking hell, we can't get him to sit down for like 10 minutes, let alone an hour and a half. But I think the plan is for him to see it once the South American stuff's done and when Christmas okay. coming up, just so they can sort of relax and have a bit of downtime and so on and so forth. But yeah, we left. And then randomly bumped into him again outside. Gene was there as well. And so, and his manager, Sam, or his, him and Deb, Sam and Debbie are sort of co-managers of Liam. And so I had a really nice chat with him as well. And it's like, yeah, it's just mad. But Gene's a lovely lad as well. Very nice.
Oh, yeah.
Nice lad. Yeah. Sort of chat with him. But yeah, just, mate, the most humble, genuine guy. And, you know, I'm not even bullshitting about it. You know, I probably would happily do it because he's Liam, isn't he? But yeah, proper nice guy. And, you know, it blows me away of how humble and genuine and how much time he's got for everybody that was there. Because he didn't need to come and do that. He didn't need to in any way, shape or form. You know, it's out of his time and, you know, he's been ill and he's, you know, he's off to South America on Monday, whenever it is. So I'm pretty sure he doesn't need to be hanging around in, you know, Shoreditch at, you know, 7-8 o'clock at night on a Thursday. But yeah, incredible. Just, yeah, once in a lifetime.
Yeah. And so it's then going to be in cinemas like in a week or so, isn't it?
A couple of weeks. A couple of weeks yesterday, wasn't it?
Put it in my diary.
16th, 17th.
Something. So, what's your plan? Are you going to like, you're just going to sort of see it local? You're going to get friends and family to go along and watch it? Or
yeah,
just sit and cringe?
Well, to be fair, mate, I literally, after my bit had finished, I like literally sat back in the chair. I was like, fine. So, it's just like, I thought, yeah, it looks a bit shit. But apart from that, I'm not, you know, I actually come across all right in it. So,
But yeah, we're all gonna get a few of us and get down to Odeon. Or see, even that sounds a bit wanky. It's like, oh, I'm just gonna pop down to Odeon and watch myself on the big screen again.
Well, I think you're allowed, to be fair.
One of the best bits, I'm in the credits at the end, you know, the credits that roll at the end of the film. I'm like, oh yeah, it's my name up there. It's
Was it weird seeing your face like on the big screen? Like, whoa.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. I don't know. I just didn't know what to expect. I think I think when you go into those sort of things where you don't really know, you've got no expectation of what's going to happen. So I wasn't really that worried about it. And then, you know, it's just there. I probably got, I don't know, 5 minutes in the film.
Right.
So it's, but yeah, it's, yeah, just life changing, mate. Life changing. It's just, you could never imagine it would ever going to happen. And for him to be there last night, it was just like...
Yeah, that's the icing on the cake, isn't it? Even without, like you said, even without that, it would have still just been amazing to have been chosen everything, but then to meet the man as well. Wow.
Yeah, but I would highly recommend, if you're not a massive... If you're a fan of the little angry man, you know. go and watch this, because this will blow your mind.
Absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, look, and if people want to follow you, then you're what? At John Four Bell, yeah?
Yeah, both Twitter and Instagram.
Twitter and Instagram, yeah. So go and drop over to John and tell him you heard him on the Oasis podcast and you saw him in the film. It'll be very exciting. Well, mate, I'm so happy for you. I'm so jealous. I'm like, why didn't I bloody see Liam's Instagram that day? But they would never have had me on. There's that Oasis podcast prick. But cool, mate. I'm so pleased for you. That's absolutely brilliant. You know, it's and as I said, I haven't really asked you about the life story stuff, because you know, let's see that on the big screen.
Yeah.
And people can enjoy that. But it's great. It's great that the good people who are, you know, doing good things and have gone through a lot get to have these moments. So well done, mate. Really pleased for you.
Thank you, JC. I appreciate that, mate.
No worries, mate. All right. Well, we'll leave it there. But thank you so much. And catch you soon. Or maybe give you a shout after we've all seen the film.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Love to.
All right. All the best, John. Good to speak to you, buddy.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks, mate.
Thank you, mate. All right, thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. And most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where we post separate episodes exclusive to the Patreon. And we have access to the Discord and various other bits and pieces. And so, yeah, feel free to head to patreon.com/oasispod, sign up there for as little as £1 a month. And it's a wonderful experience. Feel free to drop me an email, oasispod@gmail.com. And I have had an email this week from our friend Kevin Iverson, who appeared on the show before. He came on and did an episode about the gear of Oasis a long time ago now. So let's hear from Kev.
Hi, James. Kevin Iverson here. Long time no speak. I hope you're well. Just to let you know, I've been working with Steve Craddock this year, and I've put out a single called The Pier, which is on all major streaming platforms, in case you and the Oasis podcast listeners would like to check it out. I hope you're well. I'm still an avid listener to the show. And hopefully get to speak to you soon, mate. Cheers. Back at it again.
click, escape from the mundane. And I haven't seen you for so long. Let's meet on the pier and let the night lead us away. Cause life is just a game.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much. Great to hear from you, mate. Brilliant tune. Absolutely love it. Make sure you're checking out Kevin's stuff wherever you can. Right. That will do it for today. Give us a follow on social media. Check out the YouTube channel. I haven't joined Mastodon. Has anyone joined Mastodon? I can't be bothered with that. I've already got enough bloody social media as it is, so can't be asked. All right, have a great few days. I'll be back in touch very shortly. Next up will be an interview I've just done with Gary Crowley, which is really exciting. And also coming up very shortly on the Oasis podcast B-Sides channel will be the next Rain podcast. So when I recorded with Richard, we also, as I mentioned in the thing there, we also recorded a Rain podcast as well. That is the Rock Alternative in the News podcast, for those of you that don't know. All right, that'll do it. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.